Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome. I hope you are having a terrific Tuesday. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Monson. We are sleuths for truth, looking at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, educating, inspiring, and encouraging people to engage. We've got quite a show planned today. If you've ever invested or thought about investing in tax-free municipal bonds, this is going to be a very interesting story. Molly, it's really interesting how something that can seem somewhat insignificant could actually have repercussions throughout a complete bond market. So it's going to be interesting to talk with Kelly Sloan about this.
The ripple effect.
The butterfly effect. Yeah.
There's actually long-term consequences to decisions. Well, yep, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Before we get to that, though, we have Kelly Sloan in studio with us. And he is a public affairs consultant, a political journalist, an energy and economic policy fellow at the Centennial Institute. And he's a pretty smart guy. He kind of knows what's going on out there. So, Kelly, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Oh, it's great being on here. Thank you very much.
Yeah. First thing I wanted to mention, what's on my radar, is North Korea, Molly, apparently has backed down on the idea that they were going to send these missiles over to Guam. And I love the fact that some tough talk from Trump, can you say that? Tough talk from Trump.
Better than you said Happy Tuesday at the beginning, but yes, talk. Nope.
I guess you can't. <mind. laughs> But I think that the crazy guy over there in North Korea thought, you know what, Trump may have a point, and you know, certainly it's not over. But I think that this tough talk has been a really good thing. So,
well, hopefully, and you know, nothing's over till the fat lady sings. No pun intended, or the fat man. But we'll see what happens. I'm glad that we have somebody in office right now who does stand on strength, who doesn't back down from bullies, who, as his wife said, when he gets punched, he hits back 10 times harder. Uh-huh. And I think that's a good thing. He's surrounded himself by generals, by people who actually have been in the field, who understand what's going on, who understands the threats, and know that we can't allow somebody to keep pushing and pushing. 30 years, I think, of failed negotiations by the right and the left in America against these totalitarian, you know, type mm-hmm. regimes hasn't worked. So we have to speak in the language that they speak in. Hopefully that works.
And, you know, you're absolutely right. I think a little bit of saber rattling does have its place from time to time. I think we learned that in the 1980s for sure. And several times since then.
And John F. Kennedy as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. Let's give some credit to the Congress where it's due as well. People like Senator Cory Gardner, who voted to extend some of the toughest sanctions yet on North Korea in the direct response to their saber rattling. And of course, there was a lot of behind the scenes work to bring China, have China put a little bit more pressure on North Korea as well. Well, with anything international, of course, it's not just one thing that brings this to bear. There's a lot of pieces that are moving here. But I think this is one example where we did see some leadership that perhaps has been missing over the last few years.
Yeah, definitely. That segues very well into what were you doing this afternoon earlier this afternoon, Kelly?
So I had the dubious pleasure of attending the third town hall put on by Senator Cory Gardner this afternoon in Lakewood.
And it was dubious because why?
Well, because of the crowd, quite frankly. You know, these town halls are traditionally put on as a way for our elected officials to come back home, take questions from constituents, and engage in a little bit of back and forth. Now, of course, there's roughly half the population is not going to agree with whoever's elected.
Doesn't mean we can't have good manners and be civil.
Right. And for whoever's in office, you know, there are certainly questions that that should be asked of them, regardless of what party they're in. However, what I witnessed today and you know, what others have witnessed at the earlier town halls in Colorado Springs and Greeley was not any sort of desire for discourse or to get answers. It was political theater. It was an attempt to embarrass the senator. It was rank rudeness, mm-hmm. quite frankly. In fact, Megan Schrader, in the Denver Post earlier today.
We're talking with Kelly Sloan, with Sloan & Associates, a public affairs consultant, and he was at the Cory Gardner Town Hall today in the metro area.
So. Yeah. So Megan Schrader earlier today in the Denver Post, she attended the one in Colorado Springs, which had, in fact, many of the same people. They, people that had followed the senator had reported that a lot of the same large chunk of the crowd, probably a good third or more, went from location to location.
How do they have the time to do that? I can't figure it out.
Well, for a lot of them, this is what they do. I mean, this is a very well-oiled machine. This was a very organized protest is what it was. It wasn't attendance at a town hall. It was a organized protest. They had signs. They had handouts ready. They had little handouts with a thumbs up or thumbs down ready that were being passed out in line ahead of time.
Did they look printed? Like, were they professionally printed used their hands?
No, they were professionally printed.
So there's money behind this organization and their supplies.
Oh, of course there is, yes. Huh.
Be nice to be on the resist payroll.
as Megan Schrader wrote in Colorado Springs, I'm quoting now, Gardner was met with hostility, rudeness, and aggression. He was unable to speak over a crowd that yelled things like single payer and you suck. It was embarrassing behavior. The title of her column was that these were an embarrassment for the left. And I think that's true. I think this was despite the abuse that he's taking, I think it's over by now. I hope for his sake that it is. But despite the abuse that he's taking, I think this was a win for the senator. I think the left embarrassed themselves today. They came out looking like bullies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Kelly Sloan and Kim, I think that we've got to start to connect the dots here, right? I mean, obviously, the reason that America wants a republic type of government is so that we have the voice and we have a voice with the king. We're not sitting down. The king isn't ignoring us. We actually can sit down and talk to our elected leaders and they listen to us. We can say, this is what's working. This is what's not working. And it's supposed to be a dialogue that is to help everybody, to lift everybody up, not to shut people down and close off communications. And I think that we've gotten to the point where maybe Saul Alinsky's tactics are being used. Remember Cloward and Piven? I want to connect the dots. This isn't just a one-time deal. There's a push going on, and I'm going to tell you more when we get back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516 or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
So if you're wondering what people are actually actually what their goal is. You gotta look at the method that they're using to get their point across. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. In studio with us right now, we have Kelly Sloan. He's a public affairs consultant, political journalist, and energy and economic policy fellow at the Centennial Institute. Welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
And Molly, should I give him the phone number just in case?
Sure.
It's 303-632-4160 if anybody wants to jump in.
303-632-4160. We'd love to hear from you. Okay. So Kelly just got back from Senator Cory Gardner's town hall at CCU. Said it was pretty rough. Obviously, the hashtag resist type group was there. They were very well funded, it looks like, probably with the nice signs. And they were already had the thumbs up and the thumbs down. They knew what they were going to ask, but they were loud. They were really, shouting ugly things, but it didn't seem like they were asking real intelligent questions that had a point to lead in a way to say, you know what, you're our senator, and we'd like to make sure that when you sit down at the bargaining table again, that you're like helping my family or, kids or education or community in this way or another.
Sure. And the most disappointing part was is when a question was asked, and there was a question about North Korea. It was asked fairly rudely and aggressively, but the senator tried to answer intelligently and walked them through the process of what they did on his committee. Of course, he's on the East Asia Affairs Committee, so he had a large part in dealing with North Korea. He tried walking them through the process, and of course, this got shouted down. And I'm not sure what the crowd wanted, if they would prefer war with North Korea or simply surrender our position in South Korea. But it was the same with any other question with Medicaid, Medicare. They weren't very well thought out questions, but the senator did his best to talk them through, here's his thought process. Here's the economics behind what he did, what he's trying to do. But the crowd would have none of it. And here's the thing. There are some liberal friends of mine that, some that were there that were as disappointed and disgusted with the crowd as I am, because a lot of them want to hear the answer.
Right.
I mean, when I confront, Senator Bennett, Senator Bennett and I don't agree on a whole lot, but I want to hear his answers to to something. But the crowd had no desire whatsoever.
Well, and that depends on what the goal is. What is the goal? Is the goal actually for us to solve some problems for the better good for everybody? To make this country a great place for everybody, like Martin Luther King saw it, without the color of our skin, just the content of our character. Like our founding father said, everybody is equal under the law. Everybody has the opportunity to go after their hopes and dreams, not just one group or another. And to do that, we had to unite. We had to see each other as equals. We had to be kind and to each other and value each other. And so I think that people really that want totalitarian like power, like Hitler and Stalin, and look at North Korea today, look at Venezuela, they don't want to hear from the people. They don't want to come to the table and discuss what's best for everybody. It's chaos. It's destruction. It's violence. You have to shout other people down. It has to get so bad, like Sal Alinsky wanted, like Cloward and Piven wanted. It has to get so bad that a big bad power has to come in and control everything for the people. And so, I think that, and I'm just going to say, under President Obama and his team, they went very far towards, they wanted the market to collapse. They were following the Sal Alinsky strategy. They were following the Cloward and Piven strategy. So was Hillary Clinton, and that's what she would have continued. But that goal was a capitalistic, let's make capitalism crash, put overload the system, put so many people on government, handouts and welfare and healthcare. You're saying, single payer. They were shouting this at Cory Gardner's event today. So many people on the system that there's no way the government can take care of it all. The whole system crashes. And here you have Venezuela. One big power comes in to take over everything. And they do it in all the different countries. It didn't work because, unfortunately for them, Hillary Clinton didn't win. So they couldn't further the same terrible economic policies Obama was pushing. So they've got to go at it a different way. And it's violence, it's anger, it's chaos, it's resist. And now you've got people that are fighting in the streets against people who are doing a peaceful protest. I mean, the violence is being encouraged. And I just feel like there is a big power that wants this. And if they can't get it, the sneaky little let's get it go against capitalism way and teach people to, want socialism, even though they don't realize that that will be their own demise, then we have to force violence and make people hate each other and divide them.
Possibly. I mean, I won't go so far as say I believe that, Democratic leaders like President Obama or Hillary Clinton wanted the economy to collapse. I think they honestly believed that their policies would work.
Do you agree? And did you know that both Hillary Clinton and Obama were Cloward and Piven fans?
Right.
And they were professors at Columbia, so they both knew them.
She
was a student of Saul Alinsky, so that was the goal. And then when Obama came out and he was a community organizer, he was literally teaching people from Saul Alinsky's community organizing handbook, which is you have to unite behind a common enemy. You have to hate. You have to blame one group. And if that's color, if it's sex, if it's a political party, it's something. And they
both were
doing that.
For left, it's class.
Right.
For the traditional left, it's class. And it's what you saw in places like the Soviet Union and China and Venezuela, and to a certain extent, certainly among the resist group currently. They certainly understand that tactic, and there are certainly people, organizers of this current left wing movement that not only understand but work that tactic to their advantage. The simple fact is that authoritarian government or a centrally planned authoritarian government can't survive under a plurality of ideas. That's why you saw the crackdown on, the monopoly of thought in places like the Soviet Union and any tyranny.
And safe
really.
Spaces and quiet spaces in
exactly.
colleges today.
The soft tyranny that we've seen over the last few decades. I do agree with you that I think it's becoming less soft.
Well, yeah. Kelly Sloan, I think you're right. Less soft. Yes. During break, we were talking about some words, and I'm going to start with words. I'm going to throw it out here. So if I say destruction, what do you think the opposite of that is?
Creation.
Construction.
Creation, construction, right. Chaos.
Order.
Yes. Denigrate.
Build.
Lift up.
Respect.
Yeah.
Ingratitude.
Gratitude.
Envy.
Gratitude.
Mm-hmm. So it goes back to
respect.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Kelly, you had mentioned that really is the difference between this far left and the principles that have made America great, and that is the idea of gratitude.
Yeah. I was speaking a little more philosophically overall. I think it was, I may be wrong, I think it was Michael Oakeshott that first wrote this idea down when trying to delineate, what would be the one main difference between, left-wing liberalism and conservatism. And conservatism, of course, in a broader sense that, of course, we're
conserving
we're,
the ideas of the prince and the
and, we're let's say we're a fairly fractured bunch, us on the right. You have your libertarians, you have your traditional conservatives, you have, of course, there's a difference between British conservatism, Toryism, and that in the U.S. But, in general, the idea of conservatism.
And Kelly, I was at a meeting this week. It just made me think of this, that somebody had referred to the Republicans as a well-oiled machine. I thought I was going to fall off my chair laughing.
But it's one of those well-oiled, like old lawnmowers you push that there's no engine to.
Yeah, exactly. What Oakeshott wrote, if it was in fact Oakeshott, was that the main delineating feature between left-wing liberalism and conservatism in all its forms is a sense of gratitude. On the left, you have the sense of ingratitude, as you would, to everything that's come before us. Well, it's,
don't you think that kind of falls into
it,
that?
It falls into
There's
it.
There's either an oppressed or an oppressor. There's only the two. And I think that's what the far left thinks.
And so they think
that there's got to be one big leader that protects everybody, and that gives them this extra power.
And that's exactly what philosopher Kenneth Minogue wrote about when he came in his book Alien Powers, a Pure Theory of Ideology, and defining ideology as initially defined by Marx, and then every ideology since then, whether it be fascism or Maoism, libertarianism for that matter, and anything that, there needs to be an oppressor and an oppressed, like you said. But getting back to the idea of gratitude and ungratefulness, it's kind of the sense that not that America or the West, or however you want to define it, has come up with all the answers or come up with all truths, but certainly that it's come up with some of them. And there's a sense that of ingratitude that we, when you try to say that, we haven't come up with at least some truths, that we haven't come up with some
It's not acknowledging that there is some
not acknowledging good. The past. Yeah. Yeah, you know, warts and all.
Yeah, warts and all. That's a C.S. Lewis. I've heard something about that too. And to that point, and Molly, I think you're hitting on this as well. Is there seems to be some undercurrent of really trying to take the things that, you know, we're imperfect as a country, but to only look at the imperfections and then hold those up and instigate different people, define them not by as individuals, but by as different identities or different groups, and then try to pit those groups against each other. And I think this is going to backfire on those that are instigating this. Because I think the American people, I'm hearing people that are paying attention going, what on earth is going on? Like you say, these people are embarrassing themselves, Kelly Sloan.
They are. Well, and
we're smart people and we want solutions. And to come up with solutions, we have to be able to talk to people, even if we don't agree with them on everything. But there is a movement out there that says don't talk, don't let anybody else talk, scream and yell, and shut everybody down. Bully so that nobody leaves their house, nobody gets on Facebook, nobody talks at the water cooler or the dinner table about things that actually matter to all of us here. Don't right. problem solve. Shut it down. And that's the strategy, and I'm saying it again, I'm connecting the dots. Cloward and Piven, Saul Alinsky, and I'm going all the way back to Hitler and Stalin as well.
Sure. And, you know, that's a kind of, again, another defining attribute of particularly the left, of liberalism. You know, that ideological sense that, you know, life is structured, society is structured A through Z, or should be structured A through Z, and there's no room for error. That's why, you know, when you try and confront them on certain issues, you know, it's very black and white. There's no room to maneuver. Now, quite frankly, you know, we see that a little bit in some portions of the right as well.
Absolutely.
You and I both know
Absolutely.
People.
Yeah.
You know, we both know...
I don't think it's a left versus a right deal. I think it's a, you know, are we able to sit down at the table and actually have an open, honest, respectful conversation that someone we don't disagree with, because we feel like it's important to understand where the other person's coming from so that we can actually sharpen our swords together and come up with the right solution. But then there is a group, and maybe it's on both sides, that says, we want full power all the time, and we are going to do whatever it takes to get the means to the end. It's worth it. It
right.
does not matter. We will kill. We will do whatever it is to shut down anyone who disagrees with us, because we can't win the argument via discussion. It has to be through violence.
Well, it's these ideological straitjackets that, you know, people in these narrow ideologies hold that, again, doesn't allow for any maneuver, any room for error. I recently watched an old firing line. Some of you may remember Firing Line with William F. Buckley, a show from the mm-hmm. 60s to the 90s. Of course, William F. Buckley, one of my favorite authors, by the way, I quote him often, kind of the leader of the intellectual conservative movement, but a gentleman about it. He was very good friends with John Kenneth Galbraith, the leading liberal of the time. And I watched an episode with the two of them having an actual discussion. It was refreshing.
Did you have a quote you wanted to give on that? We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're actually going to talk with Kelly Sloan about what we were going to talk about when we invited him on. So this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, on KDMT 1690 AM. We will be right back.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, August 11th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include The Emoji Movie, Dunkirk, and Annabelle. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Be sure to try the delicious funnel cake with up to four toppings to choose from. For more information on movie showings and times, visit 88drivein.net and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We are Sleuths for Truth, looking at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, educating, inspiring, and then encouraging to engage. Our phone number is 303-632-4160. And be sure and check out our website, AmeriChicks.com. There's all kinds of great information there. All of our shows are archived there. And then we are the AmeriChicks on Facebook. And also hashtag I Am A Movement on Facebook. Kelly Sloan, thanks for being here in studio with us. I just a question. Does your computer work perfectly all the time?
No, unequivocally no.
Well, do you know what? In mid-September, you're going to be very excited to know that Evan, your IT guy, which is a network of IT professionals ready to provide on-demand help with your computer needs, will be going live. And if you wanted one of these little handy-dandy webcam covers that Molly and I have, what you would do is go to evanyouritguy.com, scroll to the bottom on the website under Discover, you'll see free webcam cover. Click on that, fill out that contact form. Be sure to include your mailing address and then mention us, the AmeriChicks, and Evan, your IT guy, will send you a free webcam cover immediately.
Outstanding.
Yeah, isn't that exciting? And they'll be going live in mid-September. If you go ahead and sign up, you'll be getting their emails and their updates as they get going.
Yeah, so. I'm glad they're 24/7 because who else are you going to call at 2 a.m. when you're still up yeah. working on that document?
You got it. You got it. So, and what about, did you check movies for
it's
Susan?
Right.
It's
yep.
right. Okay, great.
Yeah. Check out 88 Drive-In because our friend has awesome movies. And Dunkirk is playing right now. And they've got this cool new funnel cake dessert with four different toppings to choose from. So, you know what? It's almost winter. And you don't have to worry about that bathing suit body anymore. So yeah. Go eat some funnel cake.
There you go. There you go.
88 Drive-In.
So Kelly Sloan, great to have you in studio with us. You are a public affairs consultant, a journalist, policy fellow at the Centennial Institute. We're going to actually jump into what we were really going to talk about in just a moment. But as we were going into break, you had mentioned William F. Buckley.
Right.
And so why don't you finish that thought?
Sure. So I came across one of his firing line episodes. Hoover Institute has – or sorry, Hillsdale has released most of the videos of his old firing line show where he would – for those of you too young to remember, he would bring on a guest and over an hour they would actually have a discussion on an issue. It was usually often somebody he disagreed with. And this episode was with him and John Kenneth Galbraith, who, of course, was one of the leading liberal intellectuals of the late 20th century, liberal economist from Canada, actually. But they were very good friends, Mr. Buckley, Mr. Galbraith. And he was on, and you could tell they obviously disagreed rather vehemently, rather poignantly on pretty much every topic that they covered. And they covered a lot of topics. But it was done so respectfully. It was done so – it was very fun to watch. If you ever get a chance to pull it up on YouTube, you can find it. But it was done without malice and without the rank hatred and, just the viciousness
the
that
yeah.
we get now. Uh-huh. And you could tell that they genuinely liked each other. You knew they were going to go for drinks after the show. Every year they skied together. I mean, they were
friends.
They were friends and they could disagree. And they did disagree. And they made their point, obviously, Mr. Buckley made his point much better because he had a good point to make. But they're both very skilled polemicists. There was that back and forth that I really miss in today's political discourse.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I think the point really is there's so much chaos and destruction out there, and it looks like it's just happening on a whim. But I'm here to tell you, I don't think it is. And so we can encourage everybody. Go out and talk to your friends, talk to your family members, talk to people that you don't necessarily agree 100% on everything with, and do your research and just have an open, respectful conversation, a dialogue. Our founding fathers mm-hmm. did it. That's why we have a free country today. Mm-hmm. It works.
And it was robust with those guys. Yeah. So, but we need to change gears here.
Lamar.
Yeah. And Kelly, I was in the investment business and I built my business on tax-free municipal bonds. And that was back in the 80s. And, I mean, it's hard to believe, but tax-free bonds were paying 10-12%, some of them, depending on, what was backing them up.
Right.
Municipal bonds have been a way for many retirees to have income. There's a lot of retirement plans that have municipal bonds. They have been a bedrock of financing in America. Mm-hmm. And there's a little thing that's going on in southeastern Colorado that could totally affect this, right?
Absolutely. So by way of background, we spoke about this a few months ago, but quick background. Back in 2004, the Arkansas River Power Authority, which consists of the six local communities down in southeastern Colorado, including Lamar, La Junta, Springfield, Holly, Trinidad, and one other, Los Animas, the Power Authority decided that they needed to refit or do something with Lamar Power Plant. It was an aging natural gas-fired plant. It needed something done with it. They decided to refit it to be a coal-fired plant because, of course, at the time, coal was a lot cheaper than natural gas was. This is before the fracking boom hit, and we got lots of abundance of natural gas in the country. Mm-hmm. So that decision was made, and the member communities agreed to take on debt through bonding, as municipalities do for such things, to fund the project. Initially, it was about $118 million.
Okay.
It ran into some serious problems, pretty much initially. There were some cost overruns, design problems, engineering problems. They ended up having to take on some more debt. Eventually, the bill came up to about $147 million.
Okay.
For this Lamar Repowering Project. So ultimately what happened is they got a bad boiler from a manufacturer who they ultimately won a lawsuit over. But they got this bad boiler, and this boiler failed an emissions test. So waiting in the wings.
Okay, now just a question. Was it really a bad boiler, or was there also the component of, you know, all of the EPA rules and regulations? Do you have an opinion on that?
Going by, you know, the fact they did win a lawsuit against the manufacturer, I think there was a manufacturer defect. That they did. But here's the thing. Instead of allowing, you know, to work through this, which they probably could have, there was a radical environmental group, Wild Earth Guardians. I think we've spoken to
them
before.
We've heard of them, yes.
Was waiting in the wings, just waiting for something to go wrong that they could sue over, and which they did. That's what this group does. It's a litigation outfit that offers up serial lawsuits and in a quest to overturn the Industrial Revolution in the appeals court.
So Kelly Sloan, you've seen them before.
Oh yes, I'm from Western Colorado. They've wrecked havoc in Western Colorado over roads, over mills, lumber, oil and gas, obviously, coal, obviously, pretty much any kind of mining, pretty much any kind of economic activity that might, you know, lead to the betterment of
people.
People, yes.
People who live on this earth.
Right. And we can get, and don't get me started on the Equal Access
and
Justice Act.
Don't get me started.
But anyway, so they were waiting to sue, which they did. So they sued ARPA, A-R-P-A, over, you know, the emissions of this bad boiler. The settlement that came out of that put the knife in the project and mothballed. It was done. The project was over. They couldn't afford to go on any further. It was part of the settlement. So it killed this project. Then Wild Earth Guardians goes home. And now there's all the pieces left in Southeast Colorado. So now you've got towns like Lamar. Lamar got hurt the worst. They're now without a power plant. They're the only member community without their own power plant.
So they're buying power from somebody else then, huh?
ARPA reworked a lot of their deals to...
So they're getting power. They just don't.
They
have
are getting
a plant.
Power.
Okay.
They don't have a plant. And the rates are being kept reasonably low. You know, ARPA has done what they can to, you know, rework some contracts and deliver for them. But the problem is they are without a power plant, and they are saddled with all this debt now. They're sure of the debt for this. Perhaps understandably, they felt slighted. They felt wronged, and they did what everybody nowadays does when they feel slighted or wronged, and they sued ARPA to try and get out of their debt. Now, a couple things here. First of all, if you or I go into debt, if we get a car loan, say, and the car turns out to be a disaster, a piece of garbage, things fall apart.
I had one like that one time.
I think we all have.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, and we end up having to trash it. You know, there's this. We can't go back to the bank and say, "Well, you know, it didn't work out, but I just got to walk. You know, I'm going to sue to get away from my loan." Mm-hmm. You know, you still have to pay it back or go bankrupt or whatever. I mean, if you do a mortgage, you do the same thing. We can't just sue to get out of our debt.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bad deal for Lamar. Everybody gets that. But that's what they tried to do. Now, before I go into the currently where it's at, I just want to point out what we were talking about here with the municipal bond market and what the implications of that if Lamar were to succeed in this or if it goes too terribly far. We know that Wild Earth Guardians and other groups like them, other environmental groups, the ACLU, a lot of the unions, a lot of these social justice groups are lurking around out there suing everybody over everything. Any kind of development project, whether it's transportation infrastructure, energy infrastructure, you name it, they're suing. They're putting a lot of these projects around the country in jeopardy. Now, if this happens elsewhere in the country and some other town finds itself in a similar situation where they either had just had a bad project
Chicago,
Chicago,
Detroit,
California, Puerto Rico,
yep.
You know, whether they just had a project go bad or it went bad because of because of lawsuits or bad for whatever reason, they're going to look at Lamar and say, "Hey, we can sue to get out of our debt."
What that'll do to the muni bond market?
It would be devastating.
It really would be.
Absolutely.
And I think what you're saying is the precedent it will set, and people will start, counties will do it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And interest rates will be much, much higher for municipal bonds, so it could be very detrimental. So we're going to go to break. Kelly Sloan is in studio with us, and we're talking municipal bonds.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Krebel.
Political correctness went too far, as reported in New York, where some city schools had decided to stop using certain words on tests, including dinosaurs, birthdays, Halloween, and others. The idea was to avoid offending anyone at all. Birthdays are not celebrated in various religions. Halloween is considered a pagan holiday by some, and dinosaurs imply evolution to others. But officials who propose eliminating important concepts from education should first look through the lens of liberty. Then they would understand that people must be free to make up their own minds about controversial issues. We should all be free to learn about and debate such topics. That's our right as free American citizens. Refusing to mention dinosaurs doesn't make those huge bones disappear.
The Lens of Liberty is brought to you by the Vernon K. Krebel Foundation.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, we are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. In studio with us today is Kelly Sloan, a public affairs consultant, political journalist, and an energy and economic policy fellow at the Centennial Institute. Molly, we are talking about tax-free municipal bonds. We are talking about what's happened with the Arkansas River Power Authority down in southeast Colorado. And it was unfortunate, but there are some possible long-range negative effects to the municipal bond market, depending on what happens down there. So let's go ahead and jump into that, Kelly.
Sure. So as I mentioned, you know, Lamar sued to try and get out of their debt. Now, the problem is, as I mentioned before, if they're successful in this, that sets a precedent that other towns around the nation are going to be able to look at. And if they find themselves in a similar situation, end up with, you know, a bunch of bad debt, you know, a bunch of debt from a project that either was not completed or mothballed for whatever reason, whether it was bad management, bad luck, bad legal practices on the part of some spiteful groups out there, whatever it may be. You can bet they're going to be looking at Lamar and say, well, what did they do? Well, they sued and got out of their debt. Well, heck, so am I.
Mm-hmm.
Well, keep in mind, a lot of these projects, whether it's transportation infrastructure, energy projects, even local police station, a lot of municipalities fund these things through municipal bonds,
right,
like you said,
mm-hmm.
Partly because of their safety. You know, municipalities generally don't default. And, of course, default isn't the issue here. It's just
although it could be. You know, if we start to have a precedent like that, I remember, Kelly, typically I tried to stay with general obligation bonds, which meant that it was the full faith and credit of whoever the agency was that was issuing the bonds. But, okay, let's play this out. Let's say that Lamar is able to get out of their debt and everybody's, you know,
right,
happy, supposedly, in Lamar.
Well,
but look at what might happen down the road. Is it's either going to increase costs for municipalities or different entities to go out and raise money for projects.
That's right.
Or there may not even be money. People may say, you know, they'll look at it and they'll say, you know, the financials don't work on this. I don't think it works. And the interest rate's not high enough. And, you know, we may see a financing mechanism totally leave.
Well, there's
the market.
Well, you're right. There's a couple things that could happen. Initially, what's going to happen is, you know, bond insurers are going to look at this and decide that, you know, municipal bonds all of a sudden are much higher risk than they traditionally have been. You know, initially they're offered at, like you said, very low interest rates, you know, subprime mm-hmm. interest rates.
They're not subprime loans. It's just lower interest rates.
Lowest interest mm-hmm. rates.
Right.
Because of their perceived safety, because the municipalities mm-hmm. generally don't default. Now, if they look at this, they're going to see, well, look, now there's all of a sudden this risk of municipalities suing and legally
defaulting,
being able to walk away from mm-hmm. from their loans. That's a risk, and they're going to add that risk into their calculations. Now, a couple things could happen. Either they jack up the interest rates, like you said, mm-hmm. on any of these projects. So any town that does get funding through municipal bonding for, you know, their police station, their ratepayers are going to be paying a lot higher interest rate, mm-hmm. and that's going to be passed along to ratepayers. If it's for an energy, you know, for example, something like this, another energy project somewhere, another power plant, that's going to be reflected in the people's power bills. On top, of course, everything else is going to be on mm-hmm. people's power bills, like, you know, renewable
yeah.
mandates and so on and so forth. But eventually, it's passed down to the taxpayers, so the people of these towns and cities are going to be paying more. That's assuming they even get the funding.
Right.
Like you said, they're going to look at this and say, well, look, this is just too much of a risk. So a lot of, especially smaller towns that may be a bigger risk, or in particular geographical areas. You know, if you're in a place like Western Colorado where Wild Earth Guardians is, you know, roaming around all over the place, somebody may look at this and say, no, look, there's this way too much chance that, you know, this is good. Yeah, this is going to go to a lawsuit. No. So now you don't get your police station or your power plant or your road.
Right. Molly, in a way, as Kelly Sloan's talking about this, you know, you were talking about all this chaos and the kind of the Alinsky model and the Cloward and Piven. In a way, this is you know, it's not showing up at a town hall yelling and screaming, but yet it's also an effective way to create chaos, to really affect the prosperity of everyday individuals.
I agree. And I think that, you know, if this is allowed to keep going forward and to actually really affect the muni bond market going forward, then Wild Earth Guardians and other energy groups like this are going to smell blood in the water, and they are going to be going after everybody. It is going to be lawsuit on. And
good,
what does
time
that
to
do?
Be an attorney, huh?
And, and when the lawsuits are coming and coming and coming at you in this litigious society that we already have, what does that do? That stifles progress, creativity,
innovation.
Projects. That stifles. Why would anybody take the risk if they're just going to be going after them? Just like the construction defect law here has hurt the Colorado housing market so much.
Well, sure, and let's take it a step further too. Once it starts happening, what you're going to could potentially end up seeing rather likely within the bond market is a massive sell-off. You know, once the risk becomes...
So the value of these bonds that people have in their portfolios will go down significantly.
Exactly. This is a $4 trillion market around the country. And like you mentioned earlier, a lot of retirement funds are funded by bonds. Why? Because they're traditionally very safe. You know, once you hit 50, you don't want to risk your life savings on... Mm-hmm. You know, high risk investments. You want to keep that in something safe like the muni bond market. Well, if you start seeing a massive sell off across that market because of this heightened risk now, you're going to be devaluing millions of people's retirement accounts across the country.
So and this, like this, you this, said, this, Kelly, people over 50, and when they start to move it towards a more conservative investments, and you're going to hit higher. You're going to hit older people. Right. And what you're saying with the energy prices will start going up, you're going to hit the poor.
Exactly. You know, the inflation is, of course, one of the most regressive taxes on the poor. This would be too. Yeah. You know, with the energy taxes and adding cost to that energy bill, like you said, it impacts the poor, you know, far more than it does the Al Gores of the world.
So Kelly Sloan, can we, because we haven't finished totally what's going on with the lawsuit yet. So if you're cool to get to that, because I think that the settlement has been reached. So at this point, they said they are going to refinance the loan at a lower interest rate. That's great. Lamar would have an opportunity to get $11.4 million in comp over 26 years. But it sounds like that's a doable thing, but one group saying no.
Yep. So now... You're right. So they did reach a settlement, and Lamar did agree to a settlement. You know, wiser heads prevailed. And you're right. The settlement included the main part of it was a restructuring of the loan to cut the interest rate in half so that everybody pays less. Yes, you're still saddled with some debt, and you still don't have the power plant, but you're going to be paying less for it over
less
time.
Less is good.
And Lamar, because let's face it, they are the ones that got kicked the hardest on this. They will get some compensation out of this. I think it's initially $1 million and a $400,000 for 26 years. Unfortunately, now the city of La Junta is backing off this, and they don't like the settlement. Now, there's a lot going on here. Lamar and La Junta don't like each other. There's I've talked to some people in the area. They
don't like each other.
They're neighboring
Hatfields
towns.
And McCoys,
You know, their school teams
fight. Yeah,
you
play
know,
each
you
other.
Know how
yep.
it is. More than that, I think it's just a little bit of myopia on the part of La Junta. Because they don't like what the part they don't like about this is the payments to Lamar, and if they can get those cut or reduced or eliminated, then that's less money out of their pockets. And let's face it, you know, for small cities and rural areas, it's a fair bit of money. But here's the thing: if let's say there's two options here, if they reject the settlement and it goes to court, if Lamar wins, if Lamar prevails, now La Junta and the other five remaining communities in ARPA. Now have to pay Lamar's part of that debt. That debt isn't going away. It's just going to be redistributed among the other five members. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be paying more over the long term, and they're not going to be paying at the refinanced rate. They're going to be paying at the initial 5 to 6 percentage points. So they'll be paying more in that regard. Even if Lamar loses, there's, you know, Lamar will still be paying their part of the debt back, but LaJunta will still be paying the debt back at the original interest rate.
Wow. But why won't that new negotiated rate still work?
It's part of the settlement. If they reject the settlement, then they're not. That's part of the settlement. They're not going to renegotiate the loan if they don't. Okay. If it goes to court. I mean, you know, if you're suing me over something, and I say okay, well let me give you this concession, and you're saying okay, that's fine, and we're good with that. If you tell me to go pound sand, I'm saying oh, I'm not giving you the concession.
Right.
Hey, Kelly, we have just a couple of minutes. As you're describing this, I can't quite figure out why LaJunta is doing this. Are they getting bad advice? I mean, I can't quite figure this out.
Again, I'm not sure if it's just the bad blood between the two towns or if it's just a really short-sighted that, you know, they want to keep the extra. It would probably translate into, you know, a few thousand, maybe $10,000 a year for LaJunta if these payments don't go to Lamar. But what they're, like I said, you know, over the longer term, they're going to be paying back a lot more money.
Yeah, they need to be
and, of course, there's a threat to the municipal bond market, which is going to affect them as much as it affects any other municipality around the nation.
Sometimes politicians and bureaucrats and attorneys can't figure that out, you know?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Wow, this is an interesting conundrum. So what's going to happen now? What's next?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball on it, but I think right now they're in negotiations trying to, you know, make sure to see if LaJunta can come on board with the settlement. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's in everybody's best interest if LaJunta, you know, bites the bullet, so to speak. Let's face it, this is a bad deal all around.
Yeah.
It's a terrible deal. But Wild Earth Guardians are the only group in this, by the way. I just have to mention this, that walked away scot-free from all this. They came in, did their lawsuit, caused all this wreckage that could potentially go across the nation, affect people's retirements, affect the municipal bond market, affect municipalities around the nation. And they just went back to their, like I put in my column on this, their presumably cold and dark offices, because I'm sure they don't use electricity, as offensive to the environment as that is. They retreat back to their offices and on to the next lawsuit, probably with some money in their pocket if they...
Well, kill innovation at the local level.
Yeah, you know, and one other thing, we're just about out of time, but the fact that there was this war on coal, I mean, and that was public policy that was a war on coal, which this was now a coal-fired plant. I mean, this poor plant had a whole bunch of things coming at it. And like you say, Wild Earth Guardians kind of threw the stone in the pond and then ran away, and they came out just smelling like a rose.
Exactly. Now, you know, there was a lot of blame to go around. I mean, it may not have been the, at least in retrospect, the brightest idea to go to a coal plant in this day and age. Seemed like a great idea at the time. It was cheaper at the time. Refitting it for natural gas burning may have been smarter. Mm-hmm. A nuclear plant may have been great, but that's where we're at.
Okay. Well, Kelly Sloan, thanks so much. This has been a fabulous show. John Adams' quote today on virtue: public virtue cannot exist in a nation without private. And public virtue is the only foundation of republics. There must be a positive passion for the public good, the public interest, honor, power, and glory established in the minds of the people. Or there can be no republican government, nor any real liberty, and this public passion must be superior to all private passions.
This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT, here every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great night. Bye.